Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Genesis 1:26 says, "Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the earth." After the flood, God told Noah and his sons to be fruitful and increase in number, multiply on the earth and increase upon it. The news media, politicians, and some scientists say that there's a population explosion. There's too many people, and we will soon run out of resources. Global warming is going to kill us all. Although just a couple decades ago, the big scare was the upcoming ice age. I'm thankful that the Lord is in control. But we do need to be educated on what's really happening and how to counter some of the myths out there about environmental issues. My guest today is Dr. Calvin Beissner, founder of and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. Thanks, Dr. Beissner, for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Diane. It's a privilege.
Now, we'll just start at the top. What is the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation?
The Cornwall Alliance is a network, Diane, of evangelical theologians, pastors, ministry leaders, scientists, economists, other academic experts, and policy experts, all of whom are dedicated to bringing biblical worldview, theology, and ethics, together with excellent science and economics, to pursue, at the same time, three goals. The first is biblical, scientifically sound earth stewardship. That is, doing what God told us to do in Genesis 1:28, to multiply, to fill the earth, to subdue it, and to rule over it. Doing that in a godly way, to the glory of God and to the benefit of our neighbor, combining together the two great commandments, to love God and to love our neighbor. The second goal is economic development for the world's poorest. Think in terms of people in sub-Saharan Africa who live typically on less than a dollar and a quarter per day, who don't have electricity, who don't have purified drinking water, who don't have sewage sanitation, and who therefore tend to have high rates of disease and premature death and low life expectancy. The third of our goals is the proclamation and defense of the gospel of Christ. And we see all of these as needing to be done in a world that is permeated by an environmentalist movement whose worldview, theology, and ethics are decidedly anti-Christian, whose science and economics are typically very poor, whose policies, therefore, tend to be not only not particularly helpful to the natural world around us, but often very destructive, harmful to the world's poor, partly because they tend to greatly slow economic development. And that environmental movement also tends, because it has really become a religion in its own right, with its own doctrines of God, creation, humanity, sin, and salvation, it's become quite a threat to the integrity of Christian doctrine in our churches, particularly as some parts of that movement are intentionally infiltrating churches, trying to green the message, and especially targeting our youth.
Right.
So we want to be able to address all three of these issues together. We try to do it with excellent science and economics and on the basis of a sound understanding of biblical teaching.
Wow. You have quite a job cut out for you. But you're so correct, because so few Christians understand the environment and the path the environmentalists are taking. And like you said, it has truly become a religion. And a lot of people don't tie the economy with the environment. That's an interesting view because as we see, and as you said, third world countries greatly need advanced technology, but yet environmentalists are hindering their development because of their concern for the environment. That's
crazy. That is the case. A lot of people used to think, including many ecologists, that economics and ecology just simply were worst enemies.
Yeah.
But that was really the prevalent thinking in the 1960s and 70s. And through the 80s and 90s, increasingly, ecologists and economists began to recognize that both groups were working on very similar problems. That is, how to gauge trade-offs, whether regarding money or regarding ecological systems, biosystems, how to gauge trade-offs so as to maximize the benefits to all the players involved. And so increasingly, ecologists and economists recognize that they need to be paying attention to each other and learning from each other. Now, here's part of the insight for us. If we look at environmental history, we find that the greatest ecological disasters have occurred not in the wealthiest nations, but in the poorest nations. Not in the nations with robust, free economies, where trade goes on pretty much freely as long as it's within the bounds of basic moral laws, no fraud, no theft, no violence. But in free trade economies, natural resources tend to be taken good care of.
Right.
The worst disasters
mm-hmm.
have been in the poorest countries
yeah.
and in the countries without economic freedom.
Yeah, I immediately
so
think of Africa.
Economic development is the friend rather than the
mm-hmm.
foe
right.
of the environment.
Right. Think of Africa and then in South America with the rainforest as it's being cut down.
Yeah, those two, and then also of China and the former Soviet Union, the communist countries. You know, a simple way to illustrate it is that you don't find graffiti on your bathroom walls at home, but you do find it on public restroom walls.
Right.
Why is that? Because what belongs to everybody belongs to nobody, and nobody takes care
right.
of it.
Mm-hmm.
So people need ownership in resources, and when they have that, then they tend to try to maximize the health of those resources so that they continue to be serviceable for long, long mm-hmm. periods of time.
And interesting, because that's what the Pilgrims found. First, they had a community garden. You know, everyone
yes.
got together, and then that didn't work. And I think it was Governor Bradford discovered that give those people ownership or those families ownership, then they will till that ground on that ground, and they will raise those crops.
That's right.
They
started
ownership.
Out trying to use what they called the common course
mm-hmm.
and condition. Basically, everybody produces, and then everybody shares equally in what's produced. The problem was slackers got to consume just as much as the very diligent did,
mm-hmm.
and so they almost starved the first
yeah.
year. And then
yeah.
when they quit that and went to a fully private enterprise system, everybody ate just fine.
Yeah, because it was either eat or don't. I mean, work or don't eat.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a biblical principle.
Yeah, it's true.
In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, the Apostle Paul wrote, "Whoever will not work," it's not whoever can't work. I mean, there are some people who are disabled.
Right.
But whoever will not work, do not let him eat. So that's a biblical principle,
mm-hmm.
and it's important. It ties right into the verse you started with, that God made us in his image.
Yeah.
God is a worker, and we fulfill our created purpose when we are working to serve others. When we provide everything that someone needs without making any demands on him, we treat him as less than a human being. We really
mm-hmm.
treat him as a pet.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we treat our dogs and cats.
Right,
it's not
right.
how we should treat human beings.
That's for sure. Now, explain, you said one of your goals was an earth stewardship. Just
yes.
what is that?
Well, in Genesis 2:15, after when God placed Adam into the Garden of Eden, he gave him a mandate to cultivate and guard the garden. Now, the garden was not the whole earth. We need
mm-hmm.
to keep that in mind. Its location is specified. It was in the east, in Eden. Out of it, rivers flowed that watered the rest of the earth. And if we catch the big picture biblically, the garden was the spot where man had intimate fellowship with God, and the rest of the earth was still something of a wilderness, and the mandate in Genesis 1:28 to multiply and fill the earth meant that, you know, that Adam and Eve were, through their offspring, to go out and occupy the rest of the earth, subdue it, and make more and more of it garden-like.
Mm-hmm.
So our task is partly to guard that which has already been subdued and is being ruled so that it doesn't go back into its natural state, but is fruitful and beautiful, safe, wonderful for human habitation and glorifying to God, partly also to cultivate everything that we find so that we make it increasingly fruitful for the benefit of humanity and for the rest of the creatures here on this planet. We are to rule this planet, we're to rule it as God's representatives, and we are to rule it always in accountability to him, according to the instructions in his word.
Right. It always pays to go back to the instruction manual, because God's got it laid out. And as we see some of these really far-off decisions made by, you know, environmental wackos, I'll just put it like that, where the well-being of, let's say, the spotted owl or some bug or fish,
is put above, well, like property owners' rights, and put above free enterprise, where a company wants to build a plant in such and such a place, but they found an endangered species, or they found a highly unusual creature. That creature is protected while the company's told to take a hike, where you cannot build here, where the homeowner's told they can't drill for water, can't till that land, or whatever.
You know, at the Cornwall Alliance, we certainly recognize that because God created the various different plant and animal species, we ought indeed to value them. But nothing has infinite value but God himself.
Right.
Nothing has intrinsic value but God himself. Everything else has, including us, has use value. Now, human beings have an absolute value placed on us by God, who has said that because we're created in his image, whoever sheds man's blood, by man should his blood be shed.
Mm-hmm.
So human life has a value, a sanctity, that is far beyond that of any other life on earth. But nonetheless, we should respect other forms of life, and we should do what we can to enhance their viability, and yet we also can do cost-benefit analysis in regard to them, and we should do that. We cannot, though, think in terms of rights for other animals or for plants, because having rights always entails moral capacity, at least in principle. Human beings have that capacity because we're created in God's image. Plants and animals don't.
Right.
So we have a responsibility to God for how we use them, but they do not in themselves have rights. And frankly, since rights should be enforceable by litigation in courts, and plants and animals are not capable of expressing their desires and their protests against what we do, the very notion that they have rights is irrational. And it leads to some people thinking that they can assert the rights of animals and plants and impose on the rest of us their vision of what animals and plants' rights are.
Right, and in fact, there are groups out there.
And we don't get to have a say.
Right, and there are groups out there that are actually trying to do that.
Yes, there are.
The
Colombian Constitution was recently changed to recognize the rights of Gaia, the earth goddess, although they call it Pachamama. The Swiss Constitution was recently changed to recognize ecosystem rights and to say, for example, that when you get ready to harvest a crop, you have to do it in a way that doesn't threaten, doesn't undermine the integrity and dignity of the crop.
Well, say that again. Okay, yes. This is a Swiss Constitution. You said you're supposed to protect the dignity of the crop when you harvest them.
That's
how undignified. How much more undignified they being chopped up and put into a a wagon in the back of a tractor or whatever. I mean, that's totally undignified. So, do they ever harvest anything in
they still do. Frankly, I think it's window dressing. But the way it is. You know, all of these kinds of things come from an unbiblical way of understanding the world. And that's why Christians need so desperately to learn what the Bible says about these things.
Yeah.
That's why the Cornwall Alliance has produced a series of videos called Resisting the Green Dragon, 12 lectures by 9 different scholars, theologians, scientists, economists, human life advocates, all explaining the difference between a biblical understanding of earth stewardship and the secular or the pantheistic New Age Eastern understandings of that. So people can learn from this series and from the accompanying book, Resisting the Green Dragon, Dominion Not Death, which they can get from resistingthegreendragon.com.
That's
resistingthegreendragon.com.
Okay. Now you mentioned pantheism. Let's explain what pantheism is for those who don't understand what that is.
Yeah, pantheism is the view that God is everything, and that everything is God. Closely related to that is another view called panentheism, which says that God is in everything, that God inhabits the universe as the soul inhabits the body. And then closely related to that, in turn, is animism, the notion that every rock or tree, river or lake, animal, etc., is inhabited by a divine spirit, a soul, so to speak, so that all life, then, is of equal value. All life is fundamentally one. That kind of thinking underlies the view called deep ecology or biological egalitarianism, which is what what underlies the thinking of those people who would say, well, a pig is a dog, is a
right.
boy, is
everything's
a man.
Equal. Mm-hmm. And a fish is equal. I mean, it's humans and they're all on the same level. To with
yes.
animals, humans and animals all on the same level.
Right.
That concept. Okay.
That stands behind the thinking of a person like George Foreman, the founder of Earth First, who said that if in his book Confessions of an Eco-Warrior, that if he were out in the forest and encountered a grizzly bear attacking a little girl, he wouldn't try to defend the little girl because, after all, the forest is the grizzly bear's proper territory, not mm-hmm. hers.
Okay. I'm sure her parents would not appreciate that concept.
Well, you know, where all of this really comes from, the root of it all is in the rejection of God.
Well, true.
And the embrace, instead, of the creation, the creature
right.
itself.
Worship
Paul told us in
mm-hmm.
Romans 1 that those who reject the Creator yeah. are going to worship the creature instead.
Mm-hmm.
And when people reject God, they will also reject God's image.
Yeah, that's
they will,
true.
They will begin to denigrate humanity because humanity is God in effigy. Humanity is the representative of God on earth. Since they can't attack God directly, they will attack God's representative instead.
Yeah. You said there were 9 videos? Is that how many of those were?
There are
12
lectures
okay,
plus a half-hour documentary introduction
okay.
By 9 different scholars.
Oh, okay, 9
There's
scholars.
Also a leader's discussion guide printable that's on the first of the 4 discs in the DVD series. Discussion guide with questions, with quotations, with resources for further study. So that this can be used in Sunday school, small
okay,
group, homeschooling, private Christian schools. I'm a former seminary ethics professor, and I would have been perfectly happy to use these lectures in my ethics courses. They're quite suitable all the way up through graduate education.
Well, fantastic. We definitely need this because so few realize that when it comes to global warming, or these environmental issues, period, we're talking about worldview. And you've laid out so well how our worldview, of course, affects everything in the world. And it affects, you know, the way we view the environment. And we have to realize that God is the maker of, we were made God's image. And we were set upon this earth to be the caregivers, I guess would be a good word
yeah.
to put it.
Yeah, let me give you one illustration of that. You mentioned global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And our view of this world, our view of how God, you know, where it came from, how it got to be the way it is going to affect our understanding of the whole argument over global warming. The fear of catastrophic man-made global warming really rests on the assumption that the world's climate system is extremely fragile, that it can be sent off into catastrophe that threatens all of life by a tiny, tiny change in its composition. In this case, the idea is that doubling the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from 270 parts per million to 540 parts per million, that's 27,000ths of a percent to 54,000ths of a percent.
That's still nothing. That's a drop in the bucket.
Would cause catastrophe.
Yeah.
Well, in order to believe that, you cannot believe that a wise,
mm-hmm.
omniscient, omnipotent God designed, creates, and sustains the world's climate system.
Yeah.
That's equivalent to saying that if an architect designed a building, he would be honored for making it so that if you leaned against one wall, all the feedback mechanisms would magnify the stress of your weight and the building would collapse.
Wow, yeah.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
That's excellent.
Well,
excellent
God
example.
Designed the climate system to be mm-hmm. self-regulating, self-correcting, highly stable, and that's what we find. Climate has always changed. It's cycled up and down in temperature, but within bounds that have always been supportive of life on Earth. And we simply need not fear that tiny change in atmospheric chemistry would cause some sort of catastrophe.
Yeah. I think, as you've so well said, it's a matter of man thinking he knows better than God, or man himself thinking that he is God
yeah.
and that he knows what's going to happen. He's going to be able to predict the future
yeah.
because there's some slight changes, you know, uptick in the temperatures that's going to cause catastrophe. You know, the
right.
oceans are going to rise 12 feet within the next however many years and whatever else.
Right.
I agree. It's totally ridiculous to think about. Unfortunately,
yeah.
too many are taken in by all this.
I wonder how many people have thought of the huge catastrophes caused through the 20th century by the approximately 8-inch increase in sea level.
It's right. Okay. Sea level's going
to
be 8 inches.
Sea level rose about 8 inches in the 20th century, and frankly, most people don't even know
what
happened.
Notice it.
It certainly didn't bring on any disasters.
No.
And yet, that's about the amount of sea level increase that's predicted for the next century, even assuming the kind of global warming that the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is warning of. Just another 8 inches. Frankly, human beings are well equipped to adapt to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We've been adapting to that sort of thing for centuries, and we can do it far better now than we could in the past because of our greater wealth and our greater technology.
Absolutely. Wow. I tell you what, Cornwall Alliance is right on the money with this and how you're approaching it. I know there's another evangelical organization, National Association of Evangelicals, that approaches it a little bit differently. Could you give us a little bit about how, you know, the differences between the National Association of Evangelicals and Cornwall Alliance, how you approach the environmental issues, just such as the global warming issue?
Yeah. About 5 years ago, a little bit more than 5 years ago, the National Association of Evangelicals was on the verge, its board was on the verge of endorsing a statement called Climate Change, an Evangelical Call to Action, that was heavily promoted by then Vice President for Governmental Affairs of the NAE, Richard Cizik, who about 2 years ago or so was forced to resign from his position when he publicly endorsed same-sex marriages. But the Cornwall Alliance and a number of others provided excellent scientific and economic analysis that showed that statement, the climate change and evangelical call to action, was not reliable, and so the NAE board backed off from that. But over the next couple or 3 years, Cizik still pushed for that position, and the NAE generally aligned itself with the climate alarmists. I think the biggest difference here is that while both organizations, I'm sure, are led by people with fine motives, they want to protect the earth, they want to protect the poor, they want to promote human well-being, you know, we don't assume that good motives necessarily lead to right conclusions.
Right.
And so the Cornwall Alliance enlisted the help of bona fide climate scientists and environmental economists and developmental economists to produce a series of three different papers, a call to truth, prudence, and protection of the poor, a renewed call to truth, prudence, and protection of the poor, and a Cornwall stewardship agenda that lays out in very careful, scholarly way the position that we take. And that position essentially is that climate change is natural, that it's cyclical, that it's occurred throughout Earth's history, that human emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases probably do have some impact on global average temperature, although it's minute compared with the impact of the various different natural causes like changes in solar energy output and solar magnetic wind and changes in the rate of influx of cosmic rays, ocean cycles and the like. Human influence probably has some influence, but very, very little, and that the recent and foreseeable climate changes are well within historic bounds in both rate and magnitude, and don't constitute a real risk. We will always face various risks from weather, from storms, from heat spells and cold snaps and the like. The wealthier people are, the better they can adjust, the better they can adapt to whatever climate and weather futures we have. And that means that it makes much better sense to promote economic development so that we can adapt to any kind of climate future than to try to control the globe's climate, which we cannot do effectively at any price, but which would waste trillions of dollars that could otherwise be spent providing electricity and pure drinking water and sewage sanitation and food nutrition supplements to the world's poorest, where they would have the greatest benefit to humanity.
It seems like man should learn. I mean, you listen to the weatherman in the evening predicting the weather for the next few hours and the next day, and a lot of times he's not right.
Yeah.
A few hours, so.
Yeah. Now, I have to admit, though, that there is a proper distinction between predicting weather and predicting climate. I can make a climate prediction right now that I guarantee is going to be on the money. It will be colder in Philadelphia 6 months from now than it is right now.
You're absolutely right.
Because it'll be colder that's a matter here too, of winter instead of summer. I'm in South Florida, and it actually could be warmer here 6 months from now than it is right now, because we're so far south.
Right. You can have Florida as it gets too hot in the summertime.
But the notion that we can predict changes of hundredths of a degree in so-called global average temperature, which frankly we cannot effectively measure anyway, 100 to 200 years from now, simply absurd. It goes far beyond the capacity of our most sensitive instruments and far beyond the capacity of any computer climate models.
So
the Cornwall Alliance just simply reminds us, look, God is in control. Mm-hmm. He does whatever he pleases, we're told by Psalm 115, verse 3. And therefore, we as Christian believers simply don't need to be afraid of such things.
That's right.
But you know, there is something that the world needs to be afraid of. That is the coming judgment of God on sin.
Yeah.
That's why the third of Cornwall's goals, the proclamation and defense of the gospel of Christ, is so important.
Mm-hmm.
People are sinners, and they are at enmity with God.
Yeah.
They need to be reconciled with God. And the only way for that to happen is by their trusting in Jesus Christ and his sacrifice on the cross to pay for their sins and his resurrection from the dead in victory over death and in victory over sin.
Amen. And that's, we need to definitely be reminded of that. And that's the most critical issue, not the environment, not the economy. You know, it's the getting the gospel of Jesus Christ out there.
Right. Absolutely. And that, by the way, is also one of the reasons that the Cornwall Alliance is so concerned about the environmental movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned before, it has become a religion of its own.
Oh, yeah.
And it's infiltrating
it's in
churches.
The schools.
And that's
why
Resisting the Green Dragon, the video series, and the book are
and give
so
us
important.
Give us that website as well as the website for the Cornwall Alliance.
Right. For the videos and the book, resistingthegreendragon.com. That's resistingthegreendragon.com.
Okay.
And for those who simply would like to come and read the various papers that we have on our website, cornwallalliance.org. That's cornwallalliance.org. And they can sign up, by the way, for our free weekly electronic newsletter, also at cornwallalliance.org.
Sounds good. Thanks, Dr. Beisner, because this is critical, because the young people are being sucked into this, even first graders, when you look at some of the textbooks in the public schools. So thanks, and I'm going to check into Cornwall Alliance's website more thoroughly and sign up for your weekly email.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and look forward doing it again sometime.
Okay, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Okay,
you're welcome.
Take care.
God bless.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323. Or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFAFPA.